So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
It's the lead voice of the Monkees, drummer Mickey Dolenz. Mickey, you have a lot of fans ready to see you here in the Chicago area.
Oh, I hope so. That's great. And great choice of music to play. I love that song. It's one of my favorite, written by, of course, Carole King and Jerry Goffin. And, you know, I was blessed to have some of the greatest songwriters ever writing for me. It was wonderful.
Yeah, that's a good one. You were in college when you were hired to be a Monkey, already playing and singing in a band, right?
A cover band, yeah. Mickey and the One-Nighters. Yeah, doing cover tunes of the time,
mm-hmm.
Of that era. Yeah, I was in college studying to be an architect.
No kidding.
And I was gonna, right? Yeah, and I've been in show biz all my life. My parents were in the business, and I had a series when I was a kid on NBC called Circus Boy, and then went back to school in high school, and then after high school, decided I better get serious and get a real life, and I started architectural drafting. I was going to be an architect, and my theory was, my plan was, that I was going to be an architect, and if I couldn't make it as an architect, I could always fall back on show business.
that Circus Boy series. Of course, you were the star. Yeah. You were the star there. So when you were hired to be a monkey at that point in your young career, what was your next goal?
Well, it wasn't so much a goal. My goal was to be an architect. And then I wasn't a fool, so when the Monkey audition came along, I was doing little bit parts, guest parts, in television shows of the time. In the summer, during school break, I was just doing guest shots on TV shows to kind of make some money, really, as a summer job. And then every pilot season, pilots would come along, and I would be up for them. There was, like, at least four pilots I remember that were being cast in that same year, all about music and young people. So it was in the air.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, for instance, one about a Peter, Paul, and Mary folk group, another one about a Beach Boy kind of surfing band, and another one, you know, there was like three or four. The Monkees was the only one that made it, that went to pilot, and of course got picked up as a series. But, you know, when I was in school, in college, and the pilot came along, I didn't even quit school. I just got a few days off to do the pilot and then went back to school because I knew that most of the time pilots don't sell.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't taking any chances. But then when we got the order for the series, I quit school.
The legend is that at one point you auditioned for the role of Fonzie on Happy Days. True?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I remember it actually quite well. It was a mid-season replacement, and I got called in. They needed a quick casting. They had to cast it quickly. And I remember going for a couple of interviews and then the final, and I believe it was down to me and Henry Winkler, because Henry and I became friends years later. And he recalls it. He says, I walked in after this final audition and you were there, and I thought, oh crap, I'm never going to get it. Mickey Dolenz is there. But I'm so glad he did get it, because he was perfect. He was and is the Fonz.
Mickey, you've really done everything. Child TV star, producer, director, voiceover actor, disc jockey, movies, Broadway. And you've been part of all kinds of productions and TV roles. Does it ever bother you that you're forever labeled a monkey?
Well, no, not at this point. Well, it actually never really did for me. But that's a long story. You know, I knew the business. I knew after the Monkees I wasn't going to get taken seriously as a dramatic actor. I did go to an interview or two for drama roles, and somebody would say, what are you doing here? We don't need any drummers, you know. And You know, but I knew that kind of just intuitively because I knew the business. But also, I wasn't interested in pursuing the talent side or the singing, you know, the acting or singing or anything. I'd already done that. I've kind of like been there, done that. After the Monkees, I wanted to produce and direct. And I went to England, actually, for another reason, and I ended up getting some jobs directing for the BBC. And I thought, wow, this is what I want. And I moved to England, and I was there for about 15 years, just producing and directing. And in that business, and, of course, over in England, crossover is not so unusual, especially in those days. And I got lucky directing and producing some really interesting shows. And no, nobody, you know, people might go, oh, you used to be on the Monkees show. And I was like, yeah, that was me. But after a while, when I would do an interview or a newspaper article or something, instead of starting out with Nicky Dolan's ex-Monkey, but seen at the premiere of his new, you know, it would start out, Michael Dolan's producer-director was seen at the of his new feller TV thing. And so, no, I long answer to your question, no, it never bothered me.
Yeah, well, it sounds like certainly in England you became better known for those BBC productions than being a Monkee.
Well, it was just different. In England, it's a very small industry. And so, like I say, crossover was not unusual back then, whereas crossover here was much more difficult, especially back then. Not so much now. Mm-hmm. But back then, you never saw film stars doing TV shows or vice versa. Mm-hmm. TV stars doing films or TV stars doing commercials, for instance, or in any other capacity. Mm-hmm. You know, you got kind of pigeonholed. And that's what you were, and that's what you did. And it can be very frustrating, you know, obviously. But in England, like I say, the industry being a bit smaller, there was a lot of crossover. It still is. And so, yeah, that's what happened. It opened a lot of doors. It was very helpful to have been in that very successful show. Mm-hmm. But people were also much more willing to accept me in another capacity than just as a singing drummer.
Right. Will you clear this up once and for all? Did the Monkees play and sing on the records, or were you guys replaced by studio musicians?
Well, no. What happened was, that's, again, a bit of a long story. When we were cast into the show, the audition process was extensive. It was singing, playing. You had to be able to sing and play to get in the auditions. My audition piece, for instance, and I do it in my show, it was Johnny B. Goode by Chuck Berry, because I was a guitar player. And when they cast the show, and remember, the Monkees was not a band. The Monkees was a television show about a band, an imaginary band that wanted to be the Beatles. That was the theme, the gist of the show. And when they when we were cast into the show, think of it as a musical, like on Broadway or something, or like Glee that came along. The cast of Glee were cast, and they could sing and dance and act and do all of it. But they weren't a Glee club. They were actors, entertainers, portraying the part. So that's essentially how the Monkees started. Started, I emphasize. Mm-hmm. But the producers must have had in mind that we would perform live and record, or they would not have bothered to cast us. So what happened was, when it kicked off very early on, they needed an enormous amount of material. We did all the singing, of course, but some of the playing was done by the Wrecking Crew. Have you heard of that term?
The greatest studio musicians of all time. I think they played on every hit that was recorded out on the West Coast in the 60s.
Just about, including us and including, as you know, the Beach Boys and Mamas and Papas. Everybody was using those studio guys. The same studio guys that you were referring to when you asked the question. Mm-hmm. So, yes, the producers. And remember, in our case, we had no control over who was going to record what. whereas in the other groups that were using the Wrecking Crew, they would have had some say.
Yeah.
The Beach Boys, for instance, would have had some say about who played on their songs. Whoever it was, Brian Wilson, whoever, said, no, I want the Wrecking Crew on Good Vibrations. And there's no Beach Boys playing on Good Vibrations, not to say that they couldn't play. Mm-hmm. And not to say that we couldn't play, or any of these other acts like the Byrds, who used the Wrecking Crew on their early material. But it was just more efficient. It was quicker, and it was more or less expensive because they got it right the first time. They didn't spend too much in the studio on one song. But that was the gist of it at the time. In our case, like I say, we had no control mm-hmm. until Nez kind of led the Palace Revolt. And we said, look, you hired us to sing and play. We want to sing and play. And that's when we made the album Headquarters, mm-hmm. which was just us, which was, I think, one of our finest albums. And that was just us.
And you mentioned Mike Nesmith led, as you called it, the Palace Revolt. Well, if you're going to be singing, you couldn't have any better musicians playing behind you than the Wrecking Crew, that's for sure. And that Headquarters album, the Monkees' third album, a multi-million seller back in 67, was re-released recently. How was it for you hearing those songs again?
Well, I've sung those songs, not all of them, but many of the songs from Headquarters. I have sung over the years in concert. Because when I went out and got back, had the reunion in 86, we sang a lot of songs from Headquarters. And over the years, we've sung, and I have sung, because I did most of the lead singing, not all, but I did most of it. So I have sung many of those songs, including the one that I wrote that was the number one hit in England, Randy Scouskit, off that album. But I've sung songs off all the albums over the years. In my shows, I always do the hits. So if you're a fan and thinking of coming to the show, you know you will hear all the big hits like Pleasant Valley Sunday, which you played a Clarksville Believer. You know, how can you not sing those songs written by those incredible writers, Boyce and Hart and Carole King, like I mentioned, and Neil Diamond and Harry Nilsson and Paul Williams and Neil Sedaka and, you know, those writers didn't write too many duff tunes. You know?
Right. Well, that's what everybody wants to hear at the Desplaines Theater. That'll be this Saturday. And then if you're in St. Charles, Mickey Dolan's at the Arcata Theater on Sunday. And your book will be coming out soon. I know it's called I'm Told I Had a Good Time. Great title.
Thank you. Yes, it's a book. I'm very proud of it. It's a picture book. It's 500 pages of photographs, mostly. In fact, almost exclusively. There's some captions and a few little bits of stories, but it's mainly told my life up to the and through the Monkees in photographs. I did a lot of photography and filming during the Monkees and after. My parents, of course, have stuff from my childhood. But it's a lot of stuff from my archives, and not just photos. There's some interesting things like report cards from grade school.
Oh boy!
And weird letters, you know, and stuff that I think everybody will find interesting. Mm-hmm. And a lot of photographs I took during the Monkees, and like I say, of friends of ours backstage, you know, a lot of snapshots, their home movies and home snapshots of friends like Stephen Stills and Harry Nilsson, of course, my dear friend, and when Jimi Hendrix opened for us on tour, a lot of stuff of him backstage, and the group Mitch and Noel, and the other guys, Mike and David and Peter, and I'd forgotten I'd even had all this stuff. It's quite funny.
Sounds like a
coming out in November.
A scrapbook. Yeah, we'll look for that. Yeah. How strange is it to be on a concert tour, to be on stage without Mike, Davey, and Peter?
Good question. It's with me all the time. I'm not sure I've processed it entirely. David passed away a number of years ago, and so I guess you know. But I can't turn around and even look at the video. I have a lot of video in the show, by the way, of the other guys, and I pay tribute to them. There's a lot of video. It's multimedia. Keeping up the tradition, because if I'm not mistaken, we were the first act to bring video on stage. Well, it was film, not video back then.
Right.
But we had a film projector, and so I continue that tradition. I'm not sure I processed it, especially Nesmith, because that's so recent, and we had just got off the road. Peter had been ill for quite a while, as everybody knows, and so that wasn't a shock. Davey was a shock. That was out of the blue. He was the youngest of us, ostensibly very healthy, riding horses. In fact, he'd ridden a horse that morning. But there was something wrong, you know, obviously. And that was a big shock. But it has been years. Peter, not so much, like I say.
Right.
And Nez also had some health issues. But it's kind of weird because when I'm on stage singing the songs and the video's going on behind me of a lot of it of the other guys and in the show and stuff, I can say sometimes I can't turn around because it's a little too much.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, it sounds like you put on a great show, and everybody will be out to see Mickey Dolenz in Des Plaines on Saturday and St. Charles Sunday. And Mickey, great talking to you. I hope you have a
thank you.
Hope you have a couple of great shows this weekend.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.